You're listening to Cold Drinks and Hot Takes, the podcast where two longtime BFFs have a drink together and talk about life, culture, and whatever else we feel like.
Hey, what's up, John? What are you drinking today?
Hey, Corey. I'm drinking a Rockstar today. I just needed a quick pick-me-up. It's a long day. Got a lot of stuff going on. I know it's not very highbrow or, you know, whatever, but it is what it is, and I love Rockstar. I've lately, particularly over the last couple of years, I've become kind of a fiend for these things. Like, I always have an energy drink almost. But and they just, I mean, yeah, there's not much to say about it. It's a sugar-free one. I don't know.
Do you ever mix any alcohol into a Rockstar? Because I know some people do that with Red Bull and stuff.
Yeah, no, I'm not a college kid anymore. I don't feel the need to be, you know, that up the upper and downer at the same time, just be like crazed out of my mind, but also sad or something. I don't know. so yeah, mixing energy drinks and alcohol is not really my thing, but I do love energy drinks. It's whatever, man. I wish I had a more impressive drink or something that was a little more fun to talk about, but it's just your plain old sugar-free Rockstar. Nothing very impressive about it. I mean, you know, it's got that pea yellow color, the nice after, you know, that finish of chemicals. It's real nice. So
did you drink any really good drinks over, you know, kind of over the holidays? Anything that jumped out that was super sweet or good or different?
You know what I love is it is the holidays. Good point. Also, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I drink mulled wine. My wife and I love mulled wine. So, you know, it's just star anise, cinnamon, cloves, orange, lemon, a little brandy to kick it up a notch, and some red wine. And it's just, you serve it hot. So it's like, it's... you get the actual warm temperature, you get the warming from the alcohol, you get like the sweetness from all the fruity stuff in there, and it's just really, it's a really nice drink. But what I haven't done, and the listeners need to know that you did me a solid and sent me a container of the maraschino cherries I was talking about, the Luxardo ones.
Yeah.
I've not gotten around to making a drink with those yet, but I am super excited to. I just need to do it.
Okay. For our next episode, I'm challenging you to do a drink with using the Luxardo cherries.
Oh, I will. Okay. I mean, I've already thought about it. I actually was seriously thinking about doing it for today, but it just didn't quite work out.
Yeah.
But enough about my boring Rockstar. What are you drinking?
My can is almost the same size as your Rockstar can. It's actually a big big can of beer here, but my sister's boyfriend, he's around. We do usually have our Courtney sisters come for a little Christmas get together. In the last few years, there's been a tradition of the sisters get each other all, like, they get a gift for all of their sisters. So there's four of them. So each one gets a gift of the same thing for all their sisters, but it's like their favorite things and things they like. So Mike, when he comes, he and I, since we're not the sisters and we don't get the, you know, all the different things that they're giving, we get each other something. We've just gone to giving each other typically alcohol, and so sometimes it's whiskey or whatever. But this year, he switched it up and got me a shower drink holder. So this like silicone deal that you can put in your shower for shower beer, and put in with it this beer. So there's this beer from Monkless Brewing. So Monkless Belgian Ales from Bend, Oregon. So it's a really cool brewery. So I went there with Mike and Jory and Courtney last year about this time. We were over in Bend for the new year. And it's like the whole thing is built in this. It feels like an abbey. Like it's all stone and like archways and wood, like really nice wood and cool lighting. And so it's got a great feel if you're ever in Bend and you want to just go to a cool place. Good food and tons of good beers on tap. Most of them are pretty high alcohol volume. This one is not super high. It's so this beer in particular is the Belgian style single ale. And it's a 4.8% alcohol by volume, but It's got, when you drink it, you can taste a little bit of that like traditional Belgian, almost like the banana cloves that you get from like a really traditional Hefeweizen, not as strong as that.
Yeah.
And still a real malty ale, you know, real malty kind of taste to it. And then, but this one's got a little bit of a spiciness to it as well. So it's a, it's kind of a good beer. I mean, it is a really good beer, but it's good because as you drink it, you taste different notes throughout because it's a pretty complex drinking beer, but they've got a bunch of different
stuff. It
seems
like one of those that, it seems like one of those that if you served it at different temperatures, like either slightly warmer or slightly cooler, well, actually, probably just slightly warmer than you might typically drink a beer, I bet you'll pick up even more stuff. Probably. Or that could just be what you're picking up is as it's warming up, since you don't chug it, as it's warming up when it sits there, like maybe that's what's happening, is it's like opening up some of those notes, I suppose.
That could be, yeah, that could be. And it reminds me too, when I did, so when we were in Denver, we used to go up to Fort Collins to New Belgium to their brewery because they have the best, just the best brewery tour. So if you ever, for any listeners, if you're ever,
I feel like they're the best brewery in general, just as far as not necessarily their beers. It's whatever, culture, I don't have anything against them, but I'm not, just like the culture of the company, like how they essentially seem to really have their employees' backs. And I mean, if I'm not mistaken, I think it's essentially like employee owned kind of, or something like that.
Yeah. And it might be a little different now because they just sold, or the main, you know, the owner who has the bulk of the shares sold out to another deal, but everybody. Yeah. So it is a great, so we've done their tour like three or four times. And it's free and it's super cool. But you take this tour and you hear, they tell you the story of how the owner or original owner, you know, was into beer, went to Belgium and just biked around and happened, like really randomly happened upon this person, this bar that was brewing all these great beers. And the guy started telling him all the recipes and he came back and started brewing and ended up starting, you know, kind of just messing around and starting New Belgium Brewery. But yeah, when they after like a year or 2 years, they're able to get, maybe after a year, they're able to get stock in the company and they get a bike. They get one of those cool cruiser fat tire bikes.
That's so cool.
And I think after 7 years, they get to do a sabbatical trip to Belgium on the company, which is kind of neat. And so they have a bunch of things. So you can tell from the employees that the employees enjoy being there, enjoy working. And they're, yeah, it is partially employee owned. And I think, I can't remember if, in selling it, if the employee, I think the stock might have gotten bought out. So I think all the employees might have gotten paid out on it. I'm not sure. I don't know. Or if they still do, but I think it's still a good, really good company. But all that to say, what's fun about the tour is, and like any brewery tour, you get to taste beer and everything, but as they take you around, they take you, because they brew a lot of different types of beer, so you get to learn a lot about these different styles and how to drink different ones, and they serve them in all these different glasses. And one of the things they do is they have you, as you're taking a drink, you know, they're saying, okay, breathe in, you know, breathe in right before you take a drink, and they talk about the different ways of even just how to taste it and think about the flavors. And anyways, it just was really interesting. So when you're drinking a beer, if you kind of slightly breathe in through your nose as you're taking a drink, you'll get a little more opened up, full kind of flavor of the beer. So it's hard to do that. It's hard to do that for every single drink, but as you're really honing in and thinking about the taste and the flavor notes and stuff, it's a helpful way to do it. So,
you know, as a kind of a sidebar but related, you mentioned banana cloves earlier, and I didn't know that was a thing. I mean, I know what cloves are, but I've never heard of banana cloves.
But then you mentioned
its presence in traditional Hefeweizens.
Mm-hmm.
And what I remember, the very first Hef I ever had, much like I imagine a lot of people in Oregon, was Windmere Brothers. And their Hef did not prepare me for the banana forwardness of a lot of Hefs that I've had since then. And I personally don't love that aspect of the more, like, I guess, craft style Hefs. And it could just be because theirs is the first one I drank and that's just what I expect. But I also, just that banana-ness is a little off-putting to me. Like, I can still drink it and it's fine, but it's not my favorite, I guess.
Yeah, and it might not be, but I might be wrong in saying banana cloves, but I think there's a clove maybe it's clove and banana. I don't know. That so don't, you know, someone might come at me.
Well, there actually, are.
Yeah.
There are cloves, if memory serves, in Heff's. And there's certainly that banana note is, at least I think, kind of a signature of Hefeweizen's.
Yeah, so. I don't think there's any actual banana. I think it's just it's what the way it's described. But yeah, the traditional Belgium style, I think, is what has more of that. The Widmer one is an American Hefeweizen, and that mm-hmm. doesn't typically have that. It's more blonde, and I'll say I think I prefer less of that banana taste too. I started out with like I think Hefeweizen, like the Widmer Hefeweizen, for so many people in the Northwest, is probably like your intro to craft beer in a lot of ways, like where you go, because it's still kind of a light, you know, easy drinking kind of beer, but it's got a little more depth of flavor and fullness that you don't get from a, you know, a PBR or something like that. And so all of a sudden you're like, whoa, this has got some oomph to it. Okay. And then it's a good entry in, which, you know, I know there's lots of people who knock. I feel like there's craft, really snobby craft beer people who are like,
oh, for sure.
Hefeweizen, what are you like? You know, and they'll be, you know, whatever. Like, like you're some loser, or you're some like weakling because you drink a Hefeweizen. Yeah. And I think that's super, super stupid, because I think, number one, all beer is good. And number two, it's fun to drink all different styles. I mean, I have no problem. I'll go back. When I drink a Hefeweizen, because my dad mm-hmm. loves Hefeweizen, loves the okay. Widmer Hefeweizen. When I go back and drink one of those with a lemon slice in it, really cold, I'm like, man, this is
good. Yeah, that's what I'm saying, man. That Widmer Brothers with a lemon slice is
so
like
good.
What I, yeah, like I've never been as satisfied with a Hef as I have yeah. that specific one with a slice of lemon. Like nothing else has even come close, and I try to get Hef anytime I see it on the menu just to see if maybe that's the one, and it never is.
Yeah. Yeah, it's but. So all that to say, you know, I love trying new beers, and I love knowing learning about and having the like super authentic styles and different stuff too. But I think there's no shame in drinking what you like. No beer shaming from us.
Yeah.
You know. So
absolutely.
Yeah, no, that's good. Okay. Well, what are you, reading or watching or listening to anything these days? Is there anything you've seen or liked that's pretty sweet?
Aside from kind of obsessing over Georgia right now, mm-hmm. which this isn't a political podcast, so we don't need to get too into that, aside from that, One thing I've really watched lately, I kind of binged it, was this new Netflix series called Bridgerton.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes place in like the late 1700s, early 1800s in, you know, the upper crust of England. They refer to it as the Ton, T-O-N.
Okay, yeah.
And it's just about these families, you know, when the show starts, it's like in the middle of the season, they call it. And the season is when the women of the Ton kind of make their debut. It's like when they're available for courtship to get married off to another rich family. And while that doesn't necessarily sound super awesome to me, it's written, directed, produced, I forget, but Shonda Rhimes,
who did
Scandal.
Mm-hmm.
There is one part where they make a big deal about, you know, the Scandal, and I just thought that was pretty funny. Like, I wonder if it's a throwback to the show or if it just happened to work out that way. But
did she do Grey's Anatomy too?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, but yeah, it just takes place, and it's just kind of their shenanigans. There's, you know, the Bridgerton is like the main family it follows around, and then it follows their eldest daughter. I mean, it follows everyone, but the main story is their eldest daughter getting married off that season, basically, and just kind of all the stuff that takes place. But, you know, since it's so new, I don't want to go into too much detail and ruin it for anyone, but it's just a good show. It's funny, it's dramatic, it's, you know, it's emotional. Like, it's a lot of cool stuff that, you know, when I first opened Netflix and saw a bunch of fancy people in like 1800s clothing. I was like, ugh, not another one of these like royal shows. But
yeah,
it's actually really good. I think really well done. It seems to be well received from what I've seen. But
it has a diverse cast, right?
Yeah, which actually they part of one of the episodes. And I mean, they don't make like a big story out of it, but at one point, you know, they kind of talk about how the black people did become part of the Tan, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, as we know, royal families, the upper crust isn't, well, and never really has been, very diverse. So, yeah. You know, that's actually what kind of one of the first things that struck me is when they mentioned the queen is that she was a black lady. And that shouldn't strike me. Like, that should just be like, oh, yeah, sure, why not? Why can't there be a black queen? But it's, again, 1800s England.
Yeah.
And that's why there can't be a black queen, in my mind. But the show does, like, they have a lot of, in fact, the, her love interest is a, like, the most powerful, like, rich dude on the show is a black guy.
Okay.
So...
So they're flipping things a little bit from, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but one of the things I saw, so I haven't watched this show yet, but I know Courtney has started watching a little bit and she's enjoying it. But I saw some stuff on Twitter, you know, about it. And I saw some people like responding to other people who were like, what's, you know, kind of basically saying this isn't historically accurate and da da da, like having issues with that, you know. But then other people kind of clapping back and saying, well, there actually were black people in this society, and here's some historical people who did really well, and, you know, and like actually backing it up with like, sure, yeah, maybe in this specific show, there's elements of this that are for sure fiction, you know, or for sure maybe didn't happen, you know, this way. It's not as far-fetched as some of these people, you know, some people have in their mind, like there were no black people in this high society, and that wasn't true. Yeah. So, anyways, it's
well,
got me at least intrigued to want to like check it out a little more and be like, oh, what's this about? So, yeah.
Well, another thing that they might want to focus on, if since they're being so nitpicky, is that Taylor Swift wasn't around in the 1800s, but one of her songs is on the show as like a classical music piece, basically. Like played on, you know,
like strings, a
lyre, like by the full orchestra or whatever.
Oh,
yeah,
okay, gotcha.
And like if you're gonna sit there and pick apart a fictional thing, like I don't know, I don't get.
I think for white, you know, what it is you have white people who, you know, often like with, you know, there's a, in within, and this is somewhat connected to the whole cancel culture thing, which, you know, I think has its own issues, but there's just like everything, it's rooted in something that's important to talk about and look at, where you have white people playing roles that historically weren't white or shouldn't be white and have been called out for that, right? And then more and more there's this emphasis on like, no, you know, black people need to play these roles, or Asian people need to play these mm-hmm. roles, or, you know, Indian, you know, whatever, but not putting people in roles that they don't fit in. I think this is like a white response to that, going, well, you know, let's be historically accurate here, da da da. But it's different, you know. Obviously, it's different because I think it's not. You're talking about the majority culture. So to flip the majority culture on its head and mix it up and do it differently is, I think, totally fine. But when you're talking about the minority culture who already doesn't have enough representation as it is, and you're not representing them, that's the issue. When you have the majority culture who's had way too much representation, it's okay.
Almost exclusive representation.
It's okay. Chill out. You know, you've got plenty of white people on TV. You know, I've actually had a conversation with someone. Well, I won't say who it is. It's someone who I'm working with and has having a journey, but and you know, learning, but they watching a we were watching Jingle Jangle over Christmas, and they're like, are there any white people in this show? You know, I was like, yeah, there's you know, there's a few. I was like, you know, but it's kind of gotten to this thing of like, this person in particular at times has made comments and said stuff like, kind of questioning, like if they see something like, oh, well, that's just for black people, like this show, which there are obviously there are movies and stuff that are made more for the black community, like, and that's great. But kind of this idea of like, oh, well, they're excluding. I'm like, don't you have a bazillion shows that have only white people in them? And, you know, movies that are focused fully on culture that's like white majority culture. I think it's okay that there's this movie that you don't get and doesn't make sense to you, you know, which, and that's the part is they feel, you know, like anybody feels like, oh, well, I can't get into this, you know, but what they don't get is, okay, well, that's how other people not in the majority culture might feel about some of this other stuff. And, you know, and Jingle Jangle is not even like, it's done in a way that is still very like, very approachable for any culture. It's not like all black culture reference, you know what I mean? Like it's just black, great black artist in the movie. And, you know, so, yeah. So,
yeah. Well, I mean, so one of the producers, I just looked it up because I wasn't very familiar with it, but like, it's so clearly meant to be like something that was prominent in my childhood or, you know, young adolescence, whatever, was FUBU, For Us, By Us.
Yeah.
And that's just looking at this, that's what it is. Like, it's a movie about black people for black people in a segment that is, like, overwhelmingly just a bunch of white people in their, like, real picturesque, like, settings and, like, you know, it's, I think it's, they're not being exclusive or excluding. They're just, I think, making a movie for people that aren't represented very well.
Yeah.
And that this friend is missing that point. Like, I don't know how to help them, but I would just hope that they can, you know, kind of come to the realization that not everything is for everybody. I mean, certainly everyone can watch it, but
well,
maybe,
and
you're not the target audience, and that's okay.
Yeah, and luckily this person is somebody that I'm able to be pretty blunt with and straightforward with, and you know, and they feel safe enough to process out loud with me, and I'm able to kind of go, hey, yeah, I think you need to think about it this way, and we've had good movement. So all that to say, it wasn't so much to knock that person, but to say that there are these attitudes out there, and I think this is good that these things are challenging though. So, well, that's cool.
Yeah, I mean,
at one point,
I think I was, I certainly had a couple thoughts where I was like, well, what about the historical, not necessarily historical accuracy, but like the history of whatever the particular thing is. So for example, Harry Potter, Hermione being played by a black girl, right? In like a play or something.
The Cursed Child, I think.
Yeah. And I know at the time people kind of lost their minds about it. And at that point I had gotten over it. I was just like, whatever, if they want to, whoever is the best actor for the role is who it should be, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But before that I was like, well, you know, they're typically like, it wasn't written like, you know, some things, if they're written in like 1800s England, there is a good chance that there's not going to be a lot of black people around, but who cares? Like, why can't they still play the role or whatever? Like, it just doesn't, it's so unimportant to me now.
Well,
like,
and
it doesn't,
I think,
even cross my mind.
And I think that it, ultimately it's different. Like, is this historical fiction? Is this like history? Like, we're trying to be super historically accurate with the telling of this story, you know? And I think, what are the expectations of those things, you know, and how much leeway is there? If it's fiction and you're in a time period and you want to be thought, you know, be provocative, like, go for it. If you're claiming this is perfectly historically accurate, that's another thing. But at the same time, like, the thing I could see is potentially filmmakers going, we're trying to be really historically accurate, and then in doing so, don't pull in any diversity into their cast, which is like, you know, I don't know. I think if there's, does it change the story? I guess it just depends what you're trying to do with it. But I think it's an interesting thing to continue to watch. I'm gonna shift gears just a little bit, but keeping a little bit in the same vein. So I watched Soul. We watched Soul from Pixar. And I don't know if you, have you watched that yet?
I have. We watched it Christmas morning.
Nice. Okay. So you watched it before I did. But I had seen a few people posting about it. And initially, some of the comments or conversation I saw on Twitter was really more around, had nothing to do with the diversity of it or anything like that, but more around the adult themes and the hard questions and some of the stuff that arise in it. And I felt like I was seeing white suburban parents complaining that they had to explain these ideas to their kids as they watch it with them. Like they weren't ready to be, they were expecting something different, I guess, like, which Pixar already does. If you watch a lot of Pixar, they poke at those deep issues. I mean, Inside Out for sure went that direction more than I think a lot of their movies had, but it's like they were expecting something lighter and easier, and then they had these like, okay, we're talking about the afterlife before, you know, and all these like really heady, I mean, it does have some really, really like heady stuff in it.
Yeah.
And it's like they weren't ready to address that with their kids, and they're like, we spent the whole movie trying to answer questions from our kids and da da da, and it sort of like soured them. And then other people were kind of going back and forth and going like, if you want the other stuff, watch the old movies, which, you know, makes me think of the music conversation. But so I watched it and I posted about it, kind of just saying like more addressing that and going like, I thought it was a great movie, and I don't see, you know, what some of the issue that people have with it. Maybe they don't like, you know, answering questions, da, da, da. Mm-hmm. And then I had a lot of people comment, and most people were like, yeah, that's really good. I liked it. But then, but there were a few people who commented, you know, who mentioned that, like, it's still not quite showing the Black perspective. I want to read a comment because it was really good. And a couple of these were things that I was like, oh, I did not think, totally wasn't watching it that way. I didn't think about that, but that's a really good point. So there were a couple comments. So one friend, she said, as a Black person, it was disheartening to have yet another animated movie, i.e. the Princess Frog or Frog and Princess, where we are disembodied, poor, struggling for a chance at our dreams, and self-centered a majority of the movie. For once, we just want to be in our own body and on a hero's quest or something. And I thought that was a good point. And then another friend of mine posted an article. She hadn't watched the movie yet, but she posted this article it's from The Root. And it says, why Pixar's surprisingly polarizing Soul is so, well, surprisingly polarizing, by a writer named Damon Young, who is a Black writer himself and talks about, basically addresses these different issues, but also says he really liked the movie or enjoyed watching it because it is, the music is great. It's really artfully done, but there are some problematic pieces in it. And like he talks about, like even the, you know, I don't want to spoil a bunch, but there's, he kind of switches places with a cat. And so he's in a cat in this other being who is voiced by Tina Fey, who is a middle-aged white woman, is in his body. And so, but he does know that there's a point where she's like, says, I can use any voice and I choose this voice because it really bugs people. And so kind of like, almost like that is meant to be that way. But, so it's got some, like, it's not like it's this movie that no one can enjoy, but I think it's being shared that there are some things that could be, like, it was not written for the Black community, but then it was kind of done in a little more after the fact. So the main, you know, producer is still a white guy, but there's, you know, so there's a lot of good influence from the Black community and the jazz community and different things, but it's still like not fully there. And so anyways, I really enjoyed it, but I can, in retrospect, I look back and I go, okay, I can see how those things would be considered problematic, and I didn't consider that. So
it's kind of tough because a lot of times, like, I do think that sometimes there's like nothing nefarious afoot, you know? It's just like sometimes it's okay to not like do that deep dive. And I know I'm like speaking from a place of being a white guy where I don't have to think about anything I don't want to. But I think also focusing so much energy on a fictional movie that features very prominently, almost exclusively, like, black actors. Not completely exclusively. The almost is very important here. But I think if you're featuring all these black actors, it's called Soul. It's about jazz. The main character is a black guy. Like, the soul, the Tina Fey character, is just that. She's just a soul that's like hasn't found her body yet, I guess.
Yeah.
Or whatever. I mean, I don't think that's really a spoiler. But I just think that some of this stuff gets kind of lost, and like people make stuff way more big of a deal than it needs to be, or than it even should be, I guess. But I'm not going to tell them that that's that what I'm not going to tell them their opinion is wrong. I just don't know that, like, it just doesn't make sense to me that you would focus on so much on that. Like, I know you can, sure, you can make arguments about whatever you want to make arguments about, but I think if you watch the movie, like, all that character serves to do is, like, remind him that, you know, you don't, like, you don't have to find purpose. Like, the purpose is just, like, your purpose is to live, man. To get out and, like, do things. Like, do what makes you happy. Like, whatever. Like, it's not, you don't have to be super focused on your passion and trying to figure out what that is. Like, it's all living. So, and, you know, like, that's all, like, that's the only reason the character's there. So, like, I don't think that matters who it's played by, you know?
Yeah, and I would say the difference in this conversation is I haven't, at least from what I've seen, I don't feel like there's, like, this rage about it, or that it's, like, the cancel culture, like, let's cancel this movie because of these things.
Oh, no one's ever canceling Jamie Foxx.
No,
so they can forget that.
Like. Well, but you know what I'm saying? Like, I don't think, I think it's more of a conversation and more of people going, like, hey, that's good, and it's fun, and it's a good movie, but let's still talk about these things. And I don't think, like I said, I don't think it's like this, like, up in arms, like, we're not watching the movie. Like, I think people are watching it, and they're still saying we enjoyed it, but, and I think, you know, ultimately, I think it's more of the, like, you know, I think the self-centered, bumbling character, main character that finds his way and learns a big lesson is kind of your normal, like, thing. Like, that's a pretty normal template for lots of movies and lots of especially animated movies. So I think it's more pulling from that. So I agree. I don't think it's a nefarious thing by any means, but I think it's okay to have the conversation and go, okay, that's good. That's a good thing to think about as well. So again, I don't think anybody's calling for the movie to be pulled or canceled. The bigger outrage that I saw, like I said, was from those parents that are afraid to talk to their kids about
the movie.
And
that just blows my mind, because if you think about it, like, just by demographics, like, we are largely a suburban, like, well, I don't know about largely suburban, but we're like a bunch of white people, basically, when it comes down to it at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And you're going to tell me that you're worried about explaining an animated movie to your kid when there are people who have to have, like, a conversation with their kid about, you know, how not to be harassed in public because they're black, you know? Like, you know, well, you know, don't touch anything, or, like, you know, dress a certain way. Don't wear baggy jeans, because, like, all of this stuff that shouldn't matter. Like, no one's sitting, unless they're just a stick in the mud, no one is sitting at home to their white teenage son telling them to, like, oh, you better pull those pants up if you want to be, you know, if you want to be safe or taken seriously. Like, no, you don't. Those are just conversations you don't have to have with people. And I think it's kind of nice that for once you actually have to think for a moment while you're watching a movie, rather than just mindlessly, like, enjoying it. Like, we get to mindlessly enjoy everything. Everything is made for us.
Yeah.
Like, and I know that, you know, it's not all white people saying that, but to the white people that are saying that, like, chill out. Like, you've got, like, these people have much more important stuff they have to explain, because we are, like, as a people, such trash that we've created an environment where it's necessary. Like, all that the other people are having to explain right now is, like, oh, well, what's heaven or whatever, which that's a pretty heady topic, but that's like your the worst thing you have to do is have a conversation with your kid about life, basically.
Well, and that kind of goes to like, you know, our discussion on a past episode about parenting in general is like, what kind of conversations do you have with your kids? And some parents, it's not a conversation. It's, I tell you this thing is this way and this is how it is. And they're not looking to be forced into some of these conversations. Whereas like for Courtney and I, it's like, in general, we're looking for safe ways to enter into all kinds of conversations. And we're also okay with our kids asking questions and thinking and not necessarily getting the answer right away. So, you know, Courtney and I are Christians, and so we believe in heaven and hell and all those things.
Sure.
And so, you know, there's elements of this movie where, like, Everett, our six-year-old, is like, wait, what's, you know, like, the great people, like, because, you know, like, it's referencing something that's an afterlife, and but it's not specifically, you know, connected to any religion or anything like that.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, it's kind of like heaven. But I'm, you know, I'm kind of like letting him just watch the movie and ask the questions and be a little bit of like wondering and not having to answer all those questions right away. Like, let's have a discussion. Let's think. And, you know, but it doesn't, like, even as a Christian, I'm not like, oh my gosh, this is like disrupting this narrative or whatever. Like, sure, it's bringing up more questions and maybe it makes a more complicated conversation later, but at the same time, I don't want to tell my kid, you know, I don't want to be the type of Christian even that's like, this is how it is, don't ask questions. Like, you know, like, obviously there's a huge faith element to Christianity, but there's also a lot of space to interpret and have conversations. So anyways, all that to say, like,
yeah,
that's sort of a side, a very, very much side note, but I guess I can understand where people are coming from, but I think the right approach in anything and with any topic is to find safe ways to have good conversations with your kids. I mean, and for us, it's been more this year has been around the Black Lives Matter movement, yeah, and some of the, you know, a lot of the racial tension that's been there is we've been trying to have conversations to explain that, which has been really good. But those are the like harder, scarier conversations because you're talking about really heavy things. So this is like, okay, yeah, maybe I wasn't expecting to dive into this, but it's not that hard of a conversation. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
I do. As I was watching, I was like, man, people need to get over it a little bit on that. So,
yeah. And honestly, I really think that we would, I mean, some things you don't just get over, you know, but I think a lot of things they're non-issues. Like, just move on. Like, there's actual real stuff happening that actually has like a real impact on stuff. Why are we focusing so much on stuff that doesn't really, like, it's okay, man. Their kids are going to ask questions. Like, it's kind of your job to have those answers for them, or at least encourage them to find their own. Which, speaking of encouraging your kids to, like, find their own way or whatever, totally random, but what do you think about Bean Dad? Like, have you heard about him at all?
No, I think I just saw someone post, maybe it was you that retweeted something, but what is Bean Dad?
Yeah. Yeah, so I don't know who he is. I do know that I checked his Twitter bio like before he deleted it, I guess. But it said something about him hosting a show with Ken Jennings. So that's all I know about who he is, but the issue was his daughter was hungry. He was putting together a jigsaw puzzle. And, you know, she was like, hey, I'm hungry. And he was like, well, there's some baked beans, like, you know, like, make yourself some food or something or whatever. And she was like, well, what should I eat? And he's like, I don't know, baked beans, whatever, it doesn't matter. Like, just go make yourself something. And, you know, she's like, how? Well, I don't know, figure it out, basically. Like, he was just like telling her to essentially do her thing, try to figure it out and like see what happened. And, you know, this episode went on for like 6 hours from the time like it, you know, she said she's hungry to the time she finally got those beans. And the whole time it's her struggling with a can opener, trying to figure out how it works to open the can, and her dad not helping her, but really just like, well, you know, like just trying to get her to figure it out herself. And I thought it was kind of cool. I stress the fact that I don't know anything about the guy himself, because sure. I've heard, like, apparently he's, like, kind of racist or anti-Semitic or something. I don't know. apparently he's deleted his Twitter account, so I don't really know anything, like, I don't know anything about him. He could be a huge dirtbag, and that's whatever. But this specific issue, people were just, like, calling him out. I'm like, oh, that's child abuse, this, that, and the other thing. And I'm like, dude, they're just, like, do you do everything for your kids? Like, anytime they ask, you just, like, jump to the rescue and go do it? Now, should you let a kid struggle with a can opener for 6 hours? Like, I mean, I don't know that I would. I would just get annoyed myself. Like, I don't have that kind of self-control where I could just sit there and let her mess around for 6 hours without being like, hey, this is how it works. Now, yeah. Go cook your food. But just the way, like, people just, like, piled on and attacked him, like, oh, it's child abuse, and, you know, you, like, you're such a bad dad. I'm like, no, he's just, like, I don't know, trying to help her figure it out on herself. And I thought it was kind of interesting, but anyway, that was a side note, and people seem to be losing their mind about him, and I just don't know, based on the can opener itself, how much of that is warranted. Like, I don't...
I love that he's now bean dad based on making his daughter eat baked beans. Is
yeah.
Funny. That does sound like a, like, you're that throwback dad of, like, well, go make some baked beans, you know? Just figure it out. Yeah, I don't know that I would say child abuse. I mean, it's... Obviously, there's a fine line and a point where it's like, okay, let's, or here's a snack, keep working on that can because this is good to learn or whatever. But, you know, the kid, 6 hours is not going to make anybody starve to death. So, whatever.
Exactly.
But
and that's kind of my thing. That. Like, yeah, you should. I'm sure somewhere it's like preserved for historical integrity, like in the Wayback Machine or whatever. But, yeah, it's just. It's funny. Like it was, I thought it was fun to read. I think like at the end of it, he's annoyed because she wants to open everything, you know?
Yeah.
So like if that's the case, like one, you don't know anyone else's kids or anyone else's relationship with their kids. You only know yours. So maybe like, yeah, maybe that's not how you would do it. Maybe that's not how the professionals recommend you do it, but it's your child. You know their personality. You know how they work. And I would just say that like at the end of it, when she's like super stoked to open everything that she can with it, it sounds an awful lot like he did a good job teaching her how to use it.
Yeah. Well, like, it's just the like the flat side of social media of like, hey, I'm on here. Someone posts something. I can give my opinion and my, you know, and like I can tell you why you're wrong and oh, everybody likes this. I need to tell you why it's not good. And
yeah,
you know, which fine. Like, I think it's always okay to offer the different opinion, but on the internet and on social media, it's sort of like, I don't know. People need something to argue about. And of I think course. That's where that comes from. So, but I'll check that out. I did want to share one of the things, and I talked about Soul, but I want to talk about one of the things I read over. So I had a couple weeks off over the holidays, which was really nice, and I was able to dig in and finish a book that I had started called They're There by Tommy Orange, who is a it's his first novel. He's an author who's Cheyenne and from Cheyenne and Arapaho tribes, and he lives out in Oakland area, and is from grew up in Oakland. And man, it was a just really, really compelling and great book. It starts off right off the bat, like the intro or epilogue is all about kind of sharing a little bit about the violence and genocide that Indigenous people have faced, you know, years ago, and kind of just like punches you in the mouth with like some history that people don't talk about, which is really good. And then essentially it's like following all these different characters who all have the heritage from similar tribes, and they're all people who come from these different different backgrounds where they're trying to figure out a little bit about their own identity. They know that they're Indian, but they don't exactly like they're not as naturally connected to the culture, you know. And so some of them are like gets some of the regalia, you know, some of the the stuff you wear for like a
the
powwow.
Headdresses and stuff.
Yeah, the headdress, and which, you know, and one thing about that is some of the stuff I read, like, not very many tribes had headdresses. So I know, like,
well,
a lot
and
of people...
I thought it was I think it's my understanding that headdresses are actually kind of reserved for like important people within the tribe, like not just everyone. So assuming your tribe wears headdresses, not necessarily like everyone in that tribe is even allowed to or has like earned the right to wear it. But again, I don't know. I'm not a Native American expert, but I seem to remember somewhere reading that.
I don't know if it's specifically headdresses, but you know, a lot of the like stuff you dress up in and you know, the feathers and different things. And so, and like starts going on YouTube and watching dances for powwow and, and they have these, you know, and these powwows have these dance competitions and stuff, which are really a little less about competing and more embracing their culture and being a part of something bigger, which is really cool. And so anyways, they all converge in on this big Oakland powwow. And then, you know, so it's an interesting book in the way that it's written, 'cause it's almost like essays or, almost like this documentary kind of feel to it as you read about these different people's stories, and it kind of goes back and forth around a bunch of different people, and then all of a sudden it comes back together, and there's this like pretty like climactic finish that I was not really expecting. So I don't want to spoil anything, but in terms of helping people understand, even just like, I mean, it's dealing with a lot of layers of things. So obviously people who are trying to figure out their own identity and who they are and connect to this deeper ancestry, but also like, you know, even poverty and different things of people in different parts of Oakland and how they, you know, it just made me think of a lot of different things, but it's really beautifully written. He's a very good writer. And it was a type of book. I finished it, and immediately after finishing it, I'm like, I kind of want to read that again. Like it was, I don't know. There was just things like, I felt like I could go back and get a lot of other things for him. He was a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize in 2019 for the book. So, I'd highly recommend it. I think it is really, really good. And that's one of the things, like, I feel like I've, you know, this year I dug into a lot of books around, history of racism and racial reconciliation and a lot of different, you know, different things in there, white fragility and some of that stuff. Mm-hmm. But I'm also really intrigued by learning more about Indigenous culture and strong, you know, I've been reading a lot of stuff that's also learning about the history of like some of these different tribes, like the Dakota, you know, Dakota tribe that were hung, and you know, just a number of these like genocide things that happened in our country, but also just like, this is interesting because this is current, you know, present day culture, and as I've read some different things, I'm learning like for a lot of Native Americans, it's like, they have this culture where they're more ignored or feel invisible a lot of times. Whereas like you have, you know, the Black community that is and feels oppressed and it's very visible. You have this other community of Indigenous folks who are just like, well, no one's even looking at us. Like, you know, we can say we can talk about all these different things, but no one's listening at all.
Yeah. I wonder if, like a reason for that is, you know, it's very easy to get cell phone footage of a policeman, police officer, shooting a Black man in broad daylight in a city of like 10 million people, you know, like just by sheer numbers, like it's going to happen and someone's going to have a phone to record it. But how many of us have even like passed through a place where there was a Native American reservation? I mean, I know you and I, since you've lived in Oregon, I've lived in Oregon, Idaho, like I was born in Oklahoma, like there's Native American, like there's reservations and historically Native American like land, well, the whole country basically, but that still recognizes reservations or whatever all over the place. But, you know, they're rural, typically. Like, I don't know that any Native American reservations are on Manhattan, right?
Yeah.
So I think it's just a matter of, like, it being visible. And then when it's visible, like, that's what gets people really, into it and how you can get people to your cause. And that's to say nothing of the like outstanding like organizational stuff that the like Black Lives Matter and stuff, like they really did a lot of work to like, it didn't just like magically become the thing everyone cares about. Like there's a lot of organizing, and like it's just historically been like, I mean, honestly, like it's criminal, like what we did to Native Americans. But yeah,
and I don't think it's, and I'm not trying to compare. I mean, that's the thing, is I don't feel like Native people, I don't see a lot of Native Americans comparing like our, you know, as much as just saying like us too, like, hey, and for Native Americans, it's more of this like history of doing this thing of like, we're going to move you out of here where no one can see you. We're going to get you out of the way. And some, you know, and sometimes there's genocide, but a lot of it's just, a lot of it's like relocating, and then we're going to steal your land. We're going to, you know, and you're going to be dispersed. And so it's like, whereas for a lot of the Black community, it was, you know, there was still like strong, big community where you're staying together. And again, like you said, a lot more stuff that's just visible that led to the civil rights movement and different things.
Yeah.
And, but like for like the Native community, like so many people don't even know about like the murdered and missing Indigenous women, you know, that especially up north and like in the oil areas. And like, there's a lot of like crazy stuff that's happening that should be talked about.
I imagine there's like active serial killers in the oil fields of North and South Dakota, you know, these women aren't just going missing. Like they're being, it just has to be the case that they're being abducted, murdered, disposed of, and they don't have the resources. And it's not, so I've been watching Criminal Minds a lot lately. It's kind of a tangent, but related. I've been watching Criminal Minds a lot lately. The most recent episodes finally got to Netflix after like 4 years of nothing. And there's a character who is actually Zach and Cody's mom. I don't know the actor's name, but the lady who plays their mom on Suite Life of Zach and Cody.
Mm-hmm.
And she plays this just like horrible character who comes in and like tries to disband the BAU, which is like the elite, whatever, the unit, like this elite unit that they're a part of. And her job, like she's trying to like, you know, break it up and make the department more efficient or whatever. And anyways, why I bring this up is her thing is like, well, what are the optics? What are people going to care about? Like, what's, you know, like, how can we best represent what this unit does? Like, how do we make ourselves look good? And unfortunately, like, if you apply that to real life, no one cares what happens on a Native American reservation. Like, that's not going to get any news.
Because they're not being, the majority of folks are not impacted by that.
Yeah, like no one cares. It doesn't affect you. It doesn't affect your neighbors. It doesn't affect anyone you know. It's just easy to be disconnected because it's happening on a reservation out in the middle of nowhere. Sometimes not necessarily out in the middle of nowhere, but far enough away where it's never going to get like, do you go out to a reservation to investigate the disappearance of all these women, or do you run this like super dramatic story about a killer on the loose in New York City, you know, like what's going to get the views? What do people want to see? Like, what do people react to?
Yeah.
And unfortunately, I think a lot of that is, you know, not going to be Native American stuff, which is kind of disappointing, but,
super disappointing. So, so all that to say, you know, like on my, and on my other podcast, that I've done, I was able to have on, Mark Charles, who is a Native American, Arapaho Native American man who ran for president and was able to elevate a lot of good conversation. And we had someone from his campaign who's an activist. Her name's S.A., and she came on and she was able to kind of give a lot of good information. And then I follow her on social media and she posts a lot of really good, helpful stuff. So I've just even like began following more Native American influencers on social media. And even that has been really helpful to just see good articles and just learn, even begin to learn a little bits about the culture or have it in front of me. And I think I'd like to see more of that and see more people get into it. One person, like if you're on just about any social media channel, there's a guy named Notorious Cree. That's his, like, his at Notorious Cree on TikTok. He's huge on TikTok.
Is he the one that does all of the, like, the all hoop, of the hoop dancing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he does hoop dancing and stuff. And he's, so I follow him on, now I follow him on Instagram because I'm not on TikTok, but he's pretty cool. I mean, he does like pretty basic stuff, but he has different things where you can tell he's just trying to help engage and bring people into the beauty of some of the culture. And he's, you know, so anyways, it's, yeah, I don't have a huge call to action except like dig in and people should learn. And I'm continuing to look for books that help me kind of engage in that as well and learn a bit. This was kind of fun, this book there, because it was obviously a novel, and I love novels. I love stories, and this is such a story focused thing. But it's stories that really, it's not about, it does have, there's a fantastical piece to it, but there's a lot of, like, you can tell there's a lot of real gritty storytelling in there as well. That's really good.
I think the call to action would be like, dude, learn your freaking history about where that you're too, from. Yeah. Like how, like, you didn't just magically, like, you weren't just American, you know, like, you're not, like, how you got here, like, how you, like,
yeah,
a lot of bad stuff had to happen to a lot of people so that all you have to worry about is your family history, you know, like, oh, well, my grandma came over here from Germany. Who cares? Like, let's talk about their, like, what happened in the U.S. that's actually part of U.S. history that made it possible for that to be the case in the first place.
And white people stop minimizing or, you know, not telling the full story or whitewashing it. You know, like, it's,
yeah,
I mean, what you see, I'm what's cool is I'm, you know, with my kids learning from home is I get to hear the things that they're being taught, and I get to engage a lot more with their teachers. And like my daughter in particular, she goes to a middle school where I coach track, and the other track coach I work with is her,
her socials.
Yes. Yep. And her, my other track coach is a sixth grade social studies teacher, and he has Chloe in one of his classes. And, I love, like, he gets to ask hard questions, and he, you know, he is teaching history and teaching some of these social things in a way that's like definitely bringing a better, not a better light, but a more true light to certain things. And so it's been fun because it's pushing Chloe to go like, oh, and so we were talking about Christopher Columbus and, you know, and some of the reality of some of those things. And he was able to set the stage for some, for that conversation with some, you know, some helpful stuff. So, yeah, so I'm excited. I hope more. I think more teachers are starting to do that. More of the curriculum is starting to do that. I remember taking AP US History, and we did dig into some of that. But at that time, I was like, I wasn't a very good student, so I was sort of paying attention. And you know, but still, I think in every like regular
remembering
American
just
history
enough
classes,
to get a good grade,
a good enough grade.
Yeah, exactly. Learning enough to get a good enough grade is like all that. I don't think I even cared about that in high school. I just showed up and did what work I felt like doing, and
yeah, you did.
Kind of whatever happened happened, and I, you know, I kind of paid the price for that. But that's neither here nor there. It's like 20 years ago.
It is like 20 years ago.
That's so gross, and I hate it.
Well, let me. I wanna shift a little bit as we begin to wrap up on this episode. But I want to take us to memory lane.
Okay.
And this is gonna feel a little bit sad, but I want to say RIP to Flash, Adobe Flash. So as the first of the year, Adobe Flash is gone.
Yikes!
It's out. So a lot of Flash things have transitioned to HTML5, I believe. But you know, for us, like our college years, and I was talking with my other buddy Colin, who you know do the other podcast with. We would watch all these dumb Flash cartoons all the time. And so, you know, there was things like, you know, the cartoons with the little stick figures, the 55, and like the, if you've watched the End of the World one, like Hawkeye, here is the Earth. And it goes into like this whole, you know, it's super funny. All those kinds of things. And especially, you know, we both watched Homestar Runner. And and luckily I went to Homestar Runner last night, and they're working with another like company to kind of transition things so you can still click the stuff and still watch everything. And so they're working on that. So it's still there, which is good. But that was like, you know, I watched every bit of Homestar Runner at the end of high school and early college. The email. And I even last night I was watching some of those with my kids. And of course, they're like cracking up. And Everett loves, because Strong Bad's always saying the word butt and crap and stupid. And so he's just like, you know, these are all like little like naughty words for him that he's just like loving watch. And he loves slapstick and all that kind of stuff. So, and they love Homestar because he's got that voice. And I just now remembered, speaking of memory lane, a very specific memory that is maybe one of my fondest memories. Not my fondest memory, but one that I love with us, because we would talk like Homestar sometimes, and he has this speech impediment, you know, and I don't remember what exactly we were doing, but we were in my car driving, and it's context is that you were someone who always bit your nails and had them down to the nubs, right?
Yeah,
always. And
as you can tell, the listeners can't, but I still do. But anyways, go ahead.
And that was well known, and I knew that, but I don't really remember how it came up. We were driving and we were talking like Homestar a little bit, and you were especially. And I said something about fingernail clippers, and you go, "Do I look like I need fingernail clippers?" and you didn't mean to speak in that voice. You were coming at me like in a strong, like, "Do you freaking know?" And it was like, and I remember I could have thought you did it on purpose, but your face afterwards was like sheer shock and then just hilarious. Like, we just died laughing for probably like 10 minutes. I don't know.
Oh, that was awesome. Oh man. that car, like
blue steel.
Blue steel, like a teal Pontiac something or other, as I recall.
Yes.
That put in a lot of work getting me from point A to point B when I was like 19.
That was a car that, when I look back now, I look back very fondly on, and it actually was a great car.
Yeah.
But I had it after my first love, which was my 1986 Mercedes 190E. Mm-hmm. And so I hated it. I hated blue steel for a while,
because
I came off of a super sweet, fast car that got me like 4 speeding tickets. So all that said, I don't get speeding tickets anymore either. So
right,
probably good to not have a fast car. Anyways, that's kind of a fun memory lane thing. But you can check out homestarrunner.com. I'll post a link. And if you never experienced Flash, which I've learned from talking to a lot of people, it's kind of this era of time that people, if they weren't in it at that point, they like, there's so many people who are older or younger who never really truly experienced a lot of the Flash goodness, and we are like smack in the middle of that pocket of people who were really in it, so we're kind of lucky in that way. But I would love people to still get to see it, because there's some really
Homestar Run, I've actually seen it, like I've seen it several times recently. It's like people are like rediscovering it.
Yeah.
And maybe one of the reasons they're rediscovering is because Flash is going away, and like maybe
NPR
they're just like,
did an article on it and talked about it a bit, but
yeah.
But I think the people our age who loved it or started, you know, having kids and showing it to their kids, and you know, things are all, it's always cyclical. So I hope it comes back around, because it's good stuff.
Too.
So, but yeah. So you guys, our listeners, you can follow us on Twitter at Cold Drinks and on Instagram at @ColdDrinks_HotTakes, and you know, if you're in a great mood, give us a rating and review, and yeah, we appreciate that. And mostly just listen and give us any feedback. If there's something you have read and want us to talk about or look at, shoot it our way. We're happy to.
I'm always happy to discuss other people's ideas.
And John is on Twitter at John Hampton, or is it at @John_Hampton?
Just at John Hampton on Twitter.
John Hampton. Yep.
Yep.
And you're always retweeting a lot of interesting articles. I see you, they go onto Facebook too, so every so often I'll see like a mazillion alerts that like John posted.
Yeah, and I post a lot. I need to get a life or do something, but just there's a lot of content.
Well, it's good.
We're in the perfect environment for just like a ton of content all the time, and it all seems just as important or relevant as the last thing, you know?
So, and I had a couple things that I wanted to get to that you had posted and respond to, but we just don't have enough time on this one. So maybe next time. But
maybe next time.
Yeah, but hey, it's been fun hanging out with you. And as always, John, we'll talk next time. But my friend, you ready?
Yeah.
Cheers. That was a good can clink.